All right. We are recording. Recording. Ricola.
You remember those commercials?
Ricola.
I used to love those commercials as a kid, dude. Commercials, I'll be honest. When we were kids, commercials were a lot better. They were better commercials when we were children. They were more totally clever. Better. They were better constructed, in my opinion. They really were.
They were always garbage.
Crossfire! Dude,
you're
the fucking
caught up in the crossfire.
The fucking theme song to Crossfire was like, skip it. That we, you know,
of course.
Like fucking, dude, the commercials when we were kids were better.
It just shows you the brainwashing was working.
No, because I remember when, like, I mean, there would be like Pokemon toy commercials, and I don't know if
did you
guys
suddenly have the urge to buy Pokemon toys after you saw it.
Well, yes, but
then the brainwashing was working.
No, but
we were playing Pokemon before.
Exactly. I already knew I loved Pokemon before the toys came out.
Brainwashing.
It's not brainwashing because my brain was already focused on this.
My brain was already washed.
I don't know if you guys remember these, but in 1998 or 99, Playmates started releasing toys based on The Simpsons. And I remember there were commercials for the first wave, like the first series of Simpson action figures, and I can still remember like that song that they played and the figures, and they had these talking bases where if you put them on like a special like playset, they would speak.
Really?
They would have like pre-programmed lines basically. Yeah. And I'm just like,
I can remember.
Yeah, I think that was actually one of the lines.
Yeah.
And so I'm just like, this is so amazing. Like, this is so cool. You don't see toy commercials like that anymore.
God.
Like, when's the last time you saw, like...
You don't see toy commercials, like, much at all anymore.
Exactly.
No. What do you see commercials for? Medicine? Usually some sort of disease that they're not going to tell you. It's one of those the inclusive ones where unless you take it, you're not going to know about it.
Insurance.
And you don't even see, really, commercials for TV shows anymore.
Cars,
yeah.
Cars,
that's a big one.
It's a big one.
You see Jake from State Farm all the fucking time.
Jake from State Farm.
Progressive with Flo.
Oh, God. What else? Do they do food? Is food? That's kind of like they still kind of do...
Seldom.
Like restaurants and stuff?
I feel like very seldom. Yeah, I have Blackstone. I can't do Australian.
Bear.
You can't do...
Fastest Australian for bear.
This thing for blue water. Whatever. Hams,
the beer refreshing.
The beer refreshing.
God, I miss commercials of yesteryear.
I just miss commercials in general, man.
I don't.
Oh, I totally
I loved not even just the commercials, like some of the shows. Do you remember Stick Stickly from Nickelodeon?
I
didn't grow up with
that's right, you didn't have cable.
I didn't grow up with cable.
It was stupid. Yeah.
He would always sing this jingle. It was right to me, Stick Stickly, P.O. Box 163, New York City, New York State, 10108. Like, I remember the song. It might be 963, not 163. But, like, I remember the fucking numbers. And, like, I remember the P.O. box.
Oh my God,
that is so funny.
Shows you the brainwashing worked with this one.
With the popsicle stick! It don't take much, bucks.
That says some pretty bad stuff about you.
That is so funny.
All right. Welcome to the PTG Powercast.
What were you going to say instead of PTG Powercast?
I don't know. I'm on so many shows, boys. I can't keep track of them.
Yes,
all.
You are. You're on a lot of shows.
I'm living the Andy Z show every day.
Yeah, every day. We actually willingly choose to be friends with him.
I know. I can't believe it.
Oh, man. What is wrong with us?
That's right. Welcome back. Lovely people of PTG Powercast.
Yes, welcome back to the PTG Powercast. In case you didn't know, like Andy didn't know.
Now you're listening with power.
You are listening to the PTG Powercast.
You're listening with power. So much power, in fact. Power wheels. Did you have a Power Wheels growing up?
I did not have a Power Wheels.
Did you covet anybody who had a Power Wheel growing up? Fuck you, you didn't, you some bitch.
Yeah.
Of course you did.
I did.
I wanted a tiny little fucking rubber or plastic car that I could run into things with. I remember my neighbors had these, like, they were like Power Wheels, but you actually pedaled them. But they were like these big red fucking bumper car things. Mm. And I remember they had these two handles on the side, and you know that. So yeah, if you want to turn left, you push your left hand forward. Yeah. Or whatever. They were really fucking neat. I loved them.
Interesting.
Yeah, I liked those kinds of things when I was a kid. I always coveted the Power Wheels. I would have even settled for a Barbie Jeep. Like, I don't care.
I just remember the commercials for those things where it's like you could see the kids like going like off. Like,
yeah, right.
Off-roading and stuff, like, on these little tiny hills, like, and I'm just like...
You couldn't even up the curb with those
things. Well, I know, it's so funny, but I just remember seeing them as a kid, and I'm just thinking, like, there's nowhere those things can't go.
I know, right?
I want one.
I want to park in the parking spot next to my dad's car in the garage. Yeah, I remember those things a lot.
God. Yeah.
Speaking of power, funny. So that's that. So, what the hell are you doing?
What do you mean? What am I doing?
What are you looking up?
I'm still trying to look up this artwork from TMNT, The Last Ronin. So it's funny because we are going to be talking about Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, The Last Ronin.
That's right.
So Turtles has had a... What?
Him and his adding, that's right.
That's right!
Right!
Which was completely unnecessary.
Yeah! Of our day! Oh my God.
So for those who don't know, who are not necessarily into Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, just giving it a quick two-minute intro. TMNT was huge. So in 1984,
yes.
Eastman and Laird, Kevin Eastman and Peter Laird, created the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles from their studio apartment. It was an independent comic. It wasn't Marvel, it wasn't DC, but their dream was to create comics and be able to make a living off of it.
Ironically, wasn't it born from the...
Heavily influenced by Frank Miller's run on Daredevil at the time. But anyways... Usually, back then, if you weren't Marvel and you weren't DC, independent comics just basically went to die. You printed them for, like, fanzines or something like that, where you had a small intimate group who knew what it was and enjoyed them. Well, with them, they printed off 3,000 copies of their original comic, and it sold out, like, in days. They had to... They basically reprinted it and printed off, like, second prints, third prints, and all that. And it just completely... Just every issue that they came out with was selling better than the last one. And they ended up just becoming huge.
Phenomenal.
Then they got... In 1986, there was Surge licensing, which then kind of said, okay, we can really make all of this stuff work. Give us this rights. They're ironing out their whole contract and stuff, saying, okay, we want to make a cartoon, we want to make a toy line, we want to do all this stuff, we have all of these plans for it. And in 1987, it came to fruition. The cartoon show started. Turtle Mania really, like, I think it was born in 1986, but 87 is when it launched to the masses.
Yeah.
You had the cartoon show that was so successful to kids. You had the toy line that started in 1988, which just was, like, the next hot thing for toys. You had the video games that started in 1989. You had the live-action movie in 1990, so, like, the world knew who the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles were.
Yeah.
And this was monumental because it basically opened the door for independent studios and independent creators to say, hey, I've got these ideas. Let me try the same thing that these guys did. And so it honestly gave creators an outlet to say, yeah, I can make it big too. And I don't have to work for Marvel and I don't have to work for DC
right.
to make it big. And unfortunately, I mean, there's been a lot more that have failed than have made it.
Right.
Look at
Bucky O'Hare. I mean, you had Street Sharks. I mean, you had so many other, like...
Biker Mice from Mars.
But, yeah, you had so many of these other, like... I don't see some of them even, didn't start as TV
even,
shows.
Even from, like, a video game perspective, Rare created Battletoads to try to hop on the success of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
I saw what you did there. Hop on.
Oh my god.
Sick!
I'm genius.
We're killing it.
Yeah!
But yeah, you have all... It's spawned this craze of, well, basically anamorphic things.
Like, yes.
Or anthropomorphic, I think.
Anthropomorphic,
is
yes.
For. But because I mean, how many of them were just animals? You know what I mean?
It's, yeah,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. So you're forgetting the best one,
the Batman.
Cowboys from Moo Mesa.
Oh, the Cowboys of Moo Mesa. How could we have forgotten about that?
Forgot about that stupid ass. I remember that. There were so many of them. Like there they were. Just get lost. In there really were.
That's one I'm always like, did that one really exist or did I imagine it? No, it really was real.
Dinosaurs for hire.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, so that's kind of a brief history of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Throughout the years, their popularity and their interest has grown and waned. It ebb and flows.
Yeah, yeah.
But
I know they went through a renaissance.
Yes.
Where they recreated or rebranded or whatever.
But I will say right now, the Turtles are starting to hit, like, their renaissance where it's coming back, and Turtle Mania is really starting to hit again with, like, at least in the comic book industry and comic book masses. They've been doing some interesting things where they just, one of the characters that is in the series, her name is Jenica. She has just been transformed into a turtle like 10 or 15 issues ago.
Is it gonna be like?
It's not Venus.
It's gonna Venus de Milo from
the next mutation.
Next mutation.
They did it.
Bad.
They did it with a lot more respect.
Oh, thank God.
They did it with a lot more respect. And if I'm not mistaken, I hope I'm not mistaken. At least with this one, with Jenica, it had the blessing of Peter Laird to have a female turtle. Venus de Milo did not have the blessing of Peter Laird. He said there absolutely under no circumstances will there be a fifth turtle, and under no circumstances will she be a female. And what did they do? Female fifth turtle.
The costumes didn't have their blessing either because they looked like
they looked bad.
It looked so they looked like foam core. Terrible.
They looked bad.
Bad, dude. Next mutation was an abomination.
So, but the series has been gaining new readership and new interest, and they announced months ago that The Last Ronin was going to be a story that was originally conceived by Eastman and Laird. Now, sorry, I have to kind of take a little sidestep into here, too. Kevin Eastman and Peter Laird, two guys who started TMNT.
Right.
They were best friends living in an apartment in Southampton, Massachusetts. And they were inseparable. They rose to stardom together. And unfortunately, their paths diverged, where Eastman was a younger guy by, I think, 10 years or so, than Laird, who Laird was happy just doing what they wanted to do, and he enjoyed that they were finally being able to make a living, and a really successful living, based off of this. And so he wanted to keep doing what they were doing. Eastman was the guy who was like the young kid in a candy store
McFarlane before McFarlane.
He was?
He was like McFarlane before McFarlane.
Basically,
did
yes.
What he did.
Absolutely.
He was the marketing, we could do this, we could do this, we could do this.
And
let's try that.
And all he saw was that for everything that they tried, there was dollar signs in his eyes.
Let's whore this franchise out.
Absolutely.
That's why I made the comparison.
So he was licensing out everything. He was up to for anything that they were throwing, and Laird was the one who was trying to say, like, no, we can't do this. We can't, like, we have to keep the core of what we did, what we created, and we can't, like, sell out everything.
Yeah.
Like we're still us. We have our morals, and it's got to stop somewhere.
Well, I also wonder how much of that was he was afraid of losing control of his creation.
And that's what it was, too.
Yeah.
I think you hand over the reins to somebody else, and then your baby
anymore.
Is, even though it will always be your baby, but now it's being raised by somebody else.
You don't own it.
Yeah.
You don't have any say in what's going on.
And so, unfortunately, Eastman and Laird, they kind of had a falling out. And they had not spoken to each other for, like, 20-some-odd years. There's been documentaries where they have gotten together, but obviously you can tell that
the relationship is strained.
20 years of being apart is, at that point, you don't even know who the other person really is.
Right.
And so, therefore, yeah, they can probably bridge the gap, but at the same time, it's never going to be what it was back then.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, fast forward, The Last Ronin was a story that was originally created or kind of thought imagined by Eastman and Laird. And so they decided, IDW, who now owns the comic book rights to the Turtles, that they want to do The Last Ronin, and they want to, they're going to use Eastman and Laird's original idea for The Last Ronin, and they're going to have their people basically write it. Tom Waltz, who has been kind of heavy in the IDW series of TMNT from the start, he's actually the guy who's writing it.
I say, I saw a lot of names on the front that I'm like, oh, who the hell are these? Because I recognized Eastman and Laird, and then I'm like, I saw like three other names. I'm like, who the fuck are these guys?
And so it's funny because The Last Ronin was almost like, if you've ever heard of the Marvel series What If? It's basically like that. It's a story that is not technically part of the canon, but they say that this is the TMNT, like, years and years into the future, and this is what if this happens.
Or so, DC's Elseworlds.
Yep, exactly. It's DC's Elseworlds, basically.
So they've already stated that this is not
official. Yeah, canon. I don't think it's officially canon.
It's one potential timeline. Yes. I think it's the way they're framing it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Where it's, I guess it's canon, but it's not necessarily, they don't have to end up at this point. Like,
okay.
Well, it's like Marvel with the alternate universes. You have the main 616, you have the Ultimate Universe, which I can never remember what it is. Then you have all the different numbers, and they don't necessarily all line up. It's just a potential, this could be one future if they don't succeed at what they're doing type thing.
DC did the same thing with their multiverse.
Yeah.
Almost in a weird way, kind of like the branching paths of like the Zelda timeline.
Yeah.
What if he never turned back to a kid? What if he died at Ganon? Like, that kind of shit.
It sparks
all these different timelines. Yep.
Exactly.
Okay.
So there was a lot of heat and a lot of interest because this is a story that was Eastman and Laird. Like, every Turtle fan's dream is for Eastman and Laird to work together again, to put aside their differences, work together again, and put their names together on a comic story that's Turtles.
Well, hell,
And I think that this is the closest that we have come in, three decades to them actually doing that.
Yeah, I mean, it hooked me, and I'm not a comic book guy. Like, I remember when I saw, the ad for this thing, I was like, holy shit, it's a really good concept. And I'm, like I said, I'm not well-versed in a lot of, the extended TMNT lore, but, this hooked me.
And
the concept's incredible.
And that's exactly how you know when, like I say, the Turtles are hitting a renaissance, is because they're starting to now pull in people who have never traditionally been fans of TMNT or not necessarily fell off years ago or just didn't really have an interest in continuing, following the stories. Mm-hmm. But now all of a sudden they're like, oh my god, this looks really cool. Like, I want to jump in on this.
Yeah.
And so there's been a lot of that.
Because I was big into TMNT when I was younger, and I always kind of wanted to follow it, but then, I don't remember what year it was, but when they redesigned the Turtles to be, the big kind of hulking, weird,
So 2003, they did the Fox, Fox Box one, where they weren't really big and, hulking, but they were bigger. They were...
Where they kind of, they made them distinct, which was good. I mean, they were all distinct to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
But, all of a sudden they were... Different's not the right word.
No, they weren't...
I guess?
They weren't the traditional TMNT that you were used to in the cartoon series.
Maybe that's what it was. But even, the live-action ones back in the day, I loved the live-action movies. They were really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because they were all the same. All the Turtles were the same, but you could tell the difference between them. You know, when they kind of... Just the design. Maybe it was the design of the Turtles I didn't care for.
These ones.
Maybe.
No, because I think that's the one from where Shredder was really cool design.
Yeah, these
are I think I'm thinking. I think I'm thinking more like the Megan Fox, Turtle movies.
Oh, yes, the Turtle movies and Rise of the TMNT was.
Yeah,
Well, and then there's that really terrible one.
Oh, God. Almost like the Teen Titans.
Yes, that's the Rise
ones.
Of the TMNT.
Yeah, Teen Titan looking ones were terrible.
Yeah.
But, I don't know, their design ones, that I don't care for either.
The CG one?
Oh, yeah.
I think it's when they started to go more CG.
That was right when they were taken over by Nickelodeon.
Yeah.
In 2012, Peter Laird sold his remaining, originally, Eastman sold off his stock to Laird. So yeah. Laird still owned all the rights to the TMNT, and Eastman didn't really have any say. And then in 2012, Laird sold off his remaining stock and interest in TMNT to yeah. Nickelodeon. And he made a pretty penny on that.
Oh, I believe it. Because, I mean, $60 million. They're still extremely prevalent.
Oh, they're very marketable.
Like, we say that their popularity has waned and then, you know, ebbed and mm-hmm. flowed, but, like, I really don't... they're basically a household name.
Yeah.
Every kid knows what the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles are.
Yes,
they're
they
still
do.
Toys for Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Yeah. Like, even though I didn't care for those movies,
mm-hmm.
you know, I've never seen them, they still did very well from what I understand.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, that's a testament to how great the idea really was.
Mm-hmm.
And lightning in a bottle is not the right phrase for what they did.
Oh, no. In 1986, it was. They captured lightning in a bottle. It, plain and simple. That is why they had that meteoric rise.
It's almost like they found ways to replicate that. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. They've never really lost... They've never really fallen out of, like, the public eye to where like, the general
yeah.
consensus is, oh, this sucks now. And then all of mm-hmm. a sudden, they come back and they blow you away. Like,
it became the standard after TMNT did it.
Yeah.
Where, in order to make it as, a solid thing, as a solid, like, toy line kind of... everything like that, you had to hit the trifecta of, okay, we're going to create a video game, we're going to create a cartoon, and we're going to create a toy line. You had that with...
Yeah. No, go ahead.
Oh, you had that with... oh, God, I just had a brain fart. They tried to do that with, like, Battletoads.
Mm-hmm.
They tried to do it with Bucky O'Hare.
Bucky O'Hare was the big one. I had the shoes with Bucky O'Hare.
Yes. So yeah. they had the cartoon, they had the toy line, they had the video game... They did the comic books. They tried to do that again. I remember that, believe it or not, the guy who created A Boy and His Blob,
yeah.
David Crane, he tried to do that too. But then he found out that it was like it's very expensive to do that to have to do a TV show, try to get a movie or a cartoon and a toy line. So that's why the instruction booklet for A Boy and His Blob looks so like.
Yeah,
comic
yeah.
bookish is because he was trying to do that too with A Boy and His Blob, but they even did it with Earthworm Jim. They tried
yeah.
to do it with Earthworm Jim. They had the toy line, they had a cartoon, and it's, none of the success was really replicated like it was with.
Well, I also got to say, like, Ninja Turtles also owes part of why they succeeded to the way George Lucas did with Star Wars, because like all the merchandising, the way Lucas did. Because if it had not been for Lucas pushing toys the way he did,
oh, yeah.
I don't know if Ninja Turtles, like, the toys would have taken off quite to the, like, they wouldn't have had the company backing the way that they did.
It may be.
Because I think his approach to merchandising is what paved the way for their version to work.
Sort of, but, I mean, George Lucas... I mean, his Star Wars was beloved before the toys actually came out because.
But this is why I'm talking. But yeah. It's because like yeah, Star Wars was a cultural thing, but I think the toys helped to also like it push it.
Oh, helped
and cement
solidify
it with the kids
cemented,
and
yes.
stuff like that.
Yes,
where like with Turtles, that's part of.
Oh, Turtles
what,
for sure. The cartoon did
like,
that.
The
yeah.
comic was big for people who were into comics, but then the show it, like it when it became the massive like cultural thing is the cartoon and the toys for kids.
Absolutely.
That's so like that's what I mean with the parallels with George Lucas.
Yeah, very much so.
Almost in a weird way, like Sonic the Hedgehog kind of lived that success. Only I really just correct me if I'm wrong, I don't recall any Sonic the Hedgehog toys.
Yes, there were.
I don't remember them
they
not
big.
Prevalent.
Not
as
like
they
there
were.
Weren't action figures for Sonic the Hedgehog.
Right.
There were like plushies and like stuffed animals.
Because obviously you had the game,
yes.
and then you had the comic, and you had the cartoon.
The TV show. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which somehow Sonic is still a huge thing.
Yeah.
Despite all of his failings.
Even using Jaleel White as the voice of Sonic the Hedgehog, Steve Urkel himself.
Oh my God, what a weird thing. It's just... Yeah, it's,
hey,
it's,
Tails, let's get some chili dogs.
It's so... that was pretty good. It's just so weird, like, what catches on and what doesn't, because by all accounts, Bucky O'Hare should have been successful.
Yeah.
I mean, it's fucking mm-hmm. rabbits in space with other animals. No, like, it just didn't work.
Fun fact.
It's so weird.
Fun fact. A male hare rabbit is also called a buck.
Well, that's right. I think when we, in our playthrough, you had mentioned that. So, God, that was
hence,
game.
Hence why he's Bucky.
That was game like three or five or something like that.
No, I want to say it was like,
I want to say it was four. Because we did Little Samson, Narc, Wheel of Fortune, or Jeopardy or something. We did a game show of some sort. Yeah, Jeopardy. And then I think we did Bucky O'Hare and Kickmaster were the first five. Something along those lines. It was the first 10 for sure.
Oh, I think it was actually number 5.
I think so. Yeah. I think so. But So anyway, yes, this hooked me and I remember expressing my interest to you guys and I actually read this first issue. So Paul, please explain the general premise of what Last Ronin is.
So first off though, because we've been digressing here and there, I have to digress one more time, actually. So I have to say a major thank you to the comic book store that I go to, Dreamland Comics, because the allocations for The Last Ronin were actually cut at, like... So basically what stores ordered, they only received, like, a fraction or, like, half of what they had originally ordered. Really? And so when I requested an issue and then I also requested two more issues for you guys, he was able to reserve them and then I actually got all three issues. So I mean, yes, it was fantastic that it was fantastic that he was able to provide that, even though stores were allocated what their original orders were. So special shout out to Dreamland Comics. Thank you very much. He doesn't actually listen to this, but if you guys are in the Illinois Libertyville area, check out Dreamland Comics.
Yes.
But okay, so the story of The Last Ronin is it takes place in a kind of a dystopian future. It looks very dystopian.
I would say it's very metropolis-y looking.
And you are you kind of learn right off the bat that there is, I mean, obviously the title's The Last Ronin, there is only one turtle, and he is, I don't even know what he was trying to get to.
So he was trying to get to...
Final act of revenge.
That's right. Basically. That's right, the final act of revenge, yeah.
Because the way they frame it, it looks like there's more than one turtle.
It does.
You really don't know that he's...
The last Ronin.
He's talking to somebody, he has inner monologue, and you don't know who it is, which is the whole appeal of The Last Ronin. Is obviously, as everyone knows, there's four turtles.
Yes.
But the way they frame this, you don't know which one this is.
And this turtle is actually carrying all four weapons. Yes. He's got the nunchucks, he's got the scythe, he's got the bow staff on his back, and he's also got the swords as
He's got tonfa, too.
Yeah.
The tonfas must be something new.
Mikey used them at one point.
Did yeah, he? The tonfas. Yeah, the tonfas have been used.
I think Raph used them at one point too.
I think they all did. I think it's actually kind of a throwback to the 2003 series because I think they actually used the tonfas a lot more in there.
I know he's got the black mask, the black eye mask.
Yeah.
So it's like
that's a throwback too.
Yeah, because
they didn't originally have individual colors.
They didn't. Right. It was a black and white comic, and even on the covers that were in color,
wasn't it all red?
It was all red.
Yeah.
And it was, it's funny because the original TMNT on the Nintendo has the cover art of what was issue number 4, the second print, and all of the turtles' masks were in red. And when I saw that, I'm like, these guys don't know turtles at all. Like, they're supposed to be blue, red, and purple, and orange. Like, why are they all red? Like, why would they do that? That's a mistake. And it's like, no, I just didn't know any better as a kid that that's actually what they were original. So, So the black mask, you don't know who it is. There's no identifying characteristics of it.
And the story really doesn't even tell you how far into the future this is.
No, I don't think it does.
I want to say it's like 30 or so years. I feel like I made that number, but it's like I thought I saw that somewhere where it's 30 years in the future.
The Last Ronin is essentially trying to get to the top of the tower to kill Oroku. Why can't I remember the last name?
No, it's not Oroku Saki.
It is. It's not Oroku Saki. It's actually Shredder's grandson.
Is it Oroku Karai?
Yes.
Karai, yes.
Oroku Karai, who's the essentially the overlord of whatever city this is. So he's infiltrating this city to get to the top to kill him out of revenge. Because he throughout this entire thing, he's talking about vengeance and you know, was Master taught us, you know, all these different aspects of the ninja thing and all this other stuff. And it's framed really, really well. But that's essentially what he's trying to do, is basically get revenge for that.
He's trying to get revenge. I think that there is something, because the other brothers were actually killed by this Oroku Karai, or he thinks that they were, at least, because, I mean, nothing has been solidified yet, which is why he wants it. Something happens, he does not get the revenge that he wanted, and he ends up waking up in a hospital bed, and that's the end of the first issue.
But being attended to by a very old, very ugly April O'Neil.
Yeah.
Which makes sense, she's old, you know?
Yeah,
But it's just, it's such a cool, because they don't ever distinctly say how many years it's been. But,
no.
I mean, you figure what, grandkid, probably 50 years, maybe? Because we were talking about this actually in the car right here. It's like, well, April O'Neil's old looking, but, like, the Turtles, and I was thinking to myself, well, I guess Turtles can live a very long time.
Turtles can live, like, 100, 150 years.
Some species, I think, get, like
300?
Some ridiculous amount. Because there was that one that was on the Galapagos that lived to
was like, what, 300, or no, even, like, 500 years old or something like that? It's like, I remember it was, like, a big deal when that turtle died.
Yeah, and so, I mean, it makes sense, I suppose, in that sense. And you said something about... I was like, that's a little weird. And you're like, well, it's weird that they were teenage and ninjas.
Yeah.
I was like, all right, yeah, you got a point there,
you got me there. I can't fight that one.
Yeah, so the Jonathan the Tortoise was 188 when he died.
188, holy
He was born in 1832.
God, that's crazy.
So, I mean, they could... and that's only him. Like, there are, I guarantee you, there are older, like, ones that we just didn't know about.
Yeah, that we don't know. Yeah.
But, yeah, so it was just cool, and they make a mention of a... like, there's a, like, a biker chick whose last name is Jones.
Mm-hmm.
So you...
And
just
that's, I'm thinking
deduction.
the granddaughter of Casey Jones, yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But just the whole infiltration of the city was really cool to me. The fact that he goes through the sewers and there's all these like the electrical lines and like all basically looks like, it's like, I don't know what the term is. It's not a phone line, but like cables, I guess, would just be the best.
Just power lines.
Like power lines, cable lines, all under the city, and it's just he's like, I remember the thing he said is, despite all of this technology, it's still our sewers. It's still our home, or our turf, or something like that. And it was really cool.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I liked the whole idea. Even the design of the foot soldiers was really fucking cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the artwork and just the storytelling in this was so fantastic. And it's funny, because that's actually one of the things that had ended up happening and why there was a delay. This was actually supposed to come out in August, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
And they delayed it, and it didn't come out until, did it come out in November, or was it the last week of October? Either way, it was delayed by 2 months about, and it was because the artwork was originally supposed to be done by a comic creator named Andy Kuhn, and for some reason, I guess they did not like what he had turned in.
Really?
Either that, or I don't know if there was some other issues about it, but basically they didn't think that the artwork was up to snuff with what they were, the story that they wanted to tell. So they ended up like scrapping all of his art and just doing it over again with some other artist actually doing it.
Okay.
And so that's why there was that initial delay. And honestly, the artwork looks fantastic. I loved the artwork.
I did too. I really liked it a lot.
But I was trying to look and see if there's anything like Andy Kuhn's art is like online. I couldn't find any. I couldn't find any of The Last Ronin by him. So I don't know why or how bad it looked or what it looked like that they decided that, like, last minute, the 11th hour, that they had to scrap it all and delay this story. But in the midst of having to delay it, basically, I mean, it was 2 months for more people to kind of say, like, oh my god, I want to read this story. I want to get into this.
Like I said, when you had told me it came in, I was super fucking excited. Yeah. Like, it hooked me because I like the idea so much, mm-hmm. you know, because it's turtles, it's iconic, there's four of them, the different personalities. Like, this whole idea, I feel like, is something that's generally never visited.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the loss of the others. You know what I mean? Because this is, as far as I know, this is a concept I can't recall ever being done.
Well, for
the turtles.
For the turtles. Well, so the closest that they've ever come is in the IDW series. There was, I think it was like issue 44, there was the supposed death of Donatello. Basically, he was fighting, like, the turtles were fighting with Rocksteady and Bebop, and Rocksteady used a sledgehammer and completely just smashed the shell of Donatello. And so you were under the impression that Donatello had died. And for a while, he was actually in a hospital bed. His, his mental, identity was then tied into Metalhead. Do you remember Metalhead, the metal turtle?
Yeah.
So it was his consciousness was transferred into Metalhead, and so he was Donatello for a while, and then Donatello ended up coming back. So, but that is basically the only time that they've really kind of, the turtles have grappled with what could have potentially have been death. And so, with the events of The Last Ronin, where the other turtles, obviously, they're gone. He wants revenge, so you know that something has happened that has taken them away from him. So, whoever this turtle is of the original team, he has really been just changed. Because of everything that's happened. He's had to, they've lost Splinter. Well, that was actually a while back.
Yeah, but Splinter. It sounds like, based on the way they were talking, they lost Splinter quite some time.
Yeah, they actually in canon they've lost Splinter, and the turtles have kind of been coming to grips with having to do things without their father, and now this turtle has to go on without their brothers, who have always been there and have always been a supportive outlet for him. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, I think that adds to the whole, like, who is it? Because this turtle, throughout the whole story, he's got all of this, like, pent-up aggression and is really snarky, and so you think, oh, maybe it's Raphael. But then you think, oh, well, I mean, he's lost every one of his brothers, all of his family. It looks like a dystopian future as well, too. So anybody could be just really just upset and in this mindset. So you're going through the entire issue like, okay, who is it? Who is it?
Yeah. So, it did leave a couple of questions for me. So, this Oroku Kurai.
Yes.
Have they ever mentioned him before? He's a new character now?
Not,
I would assume.
Not Oroku Kurai, but, so Shredder was Oroku Saki.
Right.
And then, actually, I don't know if,
he must have had a son at some point.
Well, no. Shredder had a daughter named Karai.
Oh, okay.
She was in one of the CG movies.
She was in the CG movie in 2007.
So is that who? Okay, so near the end, Oroku Karai's talking to somebody, and he goes to, like, that almost looks like a life support tube, and his mom's in there. He says something about Mother Dearest or something. Is that supposed to be her?
That's Karai.
That was the big thing I was wondering.
And so
is
this
who
Oroku
is
Karai is the son of her. So it's Shredder's grandson.
Because I was wondering, like, is this, am I supposed to know who this is?
Yes,
so that was
Karai.
My question.
It's Karai. It's okay. Shredder's daughter.
Okay, that makes a little more sense now.
Yeah, so
that's kind of cool.
So there actually is the lineage of Shredder in that family that the turtle, the Last Ronin, wants revenge.
Yeah, because they always allude to this family, like, family war or something like that between them and the turtles and all this other shit, and it's just kind of interesting. Like, I liked the reference to, like, the Baxter, or the what was it? Not Baxter, was it Baxter? like the Baxter Technology or whatever.
Oh yes, Stockman Technology. Yeah, Stockman Technology, because they're the ones who created the like the mousers.
The mousers. Yeah, yep. You have the flying mousers with the lasers. Then you have the big one that knocks them out of the building.
Yep.
And just it was like I said, the foot soldiers were fucking badass, especially when he starts beating the one up and it shows like part of the human face, and he's like, what, like there are people in here? And they're like, no, it's like cyborgs, but they're it's just very odd and kind of weirdly haunting, because like obviously in the movies, like the live action movies, the foot soldiers were
real people.
They were real people. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But in like the cartoon, they were just like the robots.
They were robots, yeah.
So like it kind of plays into the idea of putting them together, like are they people that are just cybernetically enhanced, or are they just robots that are designed to look like people? So it was very unsettling.
Which is funny, because they changed it. I think it actually was foot soldiers were humans. They changed it in the cartoon because they didn't want to incite violence, and so the turtles were not beating up people, they were beating up robots.
Yeah.
So it's easier to deal with.
But it was kind of cool to see, like, the evolution of what the foot soldiers became. Like, and then they had, like, the ninja ones, which were awesome. It's just, it was such a cool, like, thing to see, which is I'm super excited to see, like, the rest of this story. I haven't been this excited since Blackest Night. So,
oh, like, my God, since 2009, 2010. Yeah.
I loved Blackest Night, and this
Blackest Night was good.
This has given me the same kind of, like
not, you're excited.
I'm like, now you know what's going to happen.
Now you know what it's like to, like, a comic book cliffhanger where you're forced to have to wait, like, a month or 2 months for the next piece of the story.
I'm a bitch!
Why can't it be like Netflix?
Yeah, really. Let me binge it!
Just give me all of it!
God, are we spoiled with that now? Like, that is kind of a scary thing.
Well, you guys are spoiled with it. I still am used to comic books where it's like
I still read them monthly.
Yes. Well, yeah, and you still
have to wait. I just don't do physical anymore.
I know, yeah.
I meant more so like this.
But yes.
This current generation is
current generation
spoiled.
Is spoiled because, and in fact, Netflix is the one that has coined that phrase, like the Netflix. Binge watching is because Netflix releases everything all at one time. I remember when somebody said when we started throwing on like our videos of our games, and they're like, oh, you guys are taking the Netflix approach, where it's like we would throw all of our videos instead of like
daily
incrementally or something like that.
Yeah, I remember we got that request a lot to see if we could do, instead of releasing it all at once, every
just do
weekly,
it episodically
every day. And I'm just like, only problem with that approach is the fact that some of our games we beat are, you know, 4 episodes to 5 episodes. Generally speaking, our games are about 7 to 8.
Yeah.
But, like, it's kind of hard when we do, like, Zombie Nation. It's 3 episodes, 3 or 4 episodes. Like, it's super short. Like, but, so it kind of doesn't work out as well as we hope.
Yeah.
But, anyway, what are your thoughts on it, Kevin? You've been strangely quiet.
It's because you're talking. It's weird. I definitely really enjoyed it. I would love to see, like, the original art that got shelved in exchange. I know they didn't get rid of all of his art, because that cover of the turtle with his back to like, the panel, that's his art. That's Kuhn's art.
Oh, that is Kuhn's art?
That is one of his. What was removed from inside, I don't know. I can't find anything either. I was looking for some of the stuff. And there doesn't seem to be, like, much of anything.
So I wonder if that was just a cover. Like, there was another reason why they replaced him as artist. It wasn't over his artwork. It may have just been maybe disagreements or something.
It also could have just been one of those simple things of they had a certain vision. He drew up what his interpretation of the story, and they're like, it just doesn't quite
match what we wanted.
So they were like, we'll use what we can, but then replace him. Because his name is still on the cover.
Yeah, it is. Oh, yeah.
So, like, he's still getting credit for some of the artwork, which means they probably kept certain stuff of it and maybe redrew it.
And that could be, yeah.
So, but see, that's with comics. You never know what they keep, what they don't, because they really don't tell you any of that sort of stuff.
I know, yeah.
As to the story, I think it's really, really good so far. I love that throughout it, like, when the last surviving turtle is talking to his brothers, each one of them has their own unique speech pattern that you notice.
Yeah.
What they reference to, how they react to stuff. So the story does kind of, like, drip feed you potentials of who
it could be. Yeah.
So I like that sort of stuff. Like all the redesigned, like Baxter stuff was it cool in like the final page, like towards the end of it. I say yeah, and it, I'm really hoping in the future issues they'll explain not only how the others died, but how Oroko took control of the city. Because you gotta remember, like the Foot Clan was a shadow organization.
Yeah, it was like an underground like organization.
They were basically like the Yakuza or the Mafia.
Right.
Like they're
right.
They're a criminal organization or kingpin. Like they part of them hides in plain sight, but they do all of their stuff from the shadow. So I'm hoping they'll show how they rose to power to take over the city.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if it has something to do with Karai's thing, because he talks about all my success, you'll be with me the whole time or whatever when he's talking to her in the tube. So I wonder if she had something to do with the way they took control of the city.
And the other thing I was wondering is maybe there was like a war or something, because like when they show that back shot of like the whole city that's walled off, everything outside of it is just wasteland.
Yeah,
it looks like toxic waters and garbage.
It looks like ooze. It looked like the ooze the way he was describing it.
Yeah, because it was too toxic for people to swim through. Yeah, but then we're not mutants or whatever.
So I'm
hoping they'll show what happened to either the rest of the area or the rest of the world, and then their rise to power.
Well, something that you were not aware of, though, and this happened in, I want to say it was issue 50? Splinter kills Shredder.
Oh, really?
And he takes over the Foot Clan.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And in fact, this actually, it causes a lot of conflict with the Turtles. Like, Pops, how can you do this? You can't take over the Foot Clan. Like, they're nothing but a bunch of criminals, and so Splinter is doing what he can actually to change the Foot Clan.
To
rehabilitate them, to have a new image, to be more of, like, defenders versus criminals who are doing this. But the Turtles still never see eye to eye with him on it, but... But yeah, so it's very interesting, because that adds a whole nother dynamic of, well, the Foot Clan seems to be the old Foot Clan that they were before, so something must have happened in between there where...
Or that's where this one also separates. Maybe Splinter lost that fight.
And maybe,
the way it made it look like is almost the Foot Clan is kind of like police. Like, they're like police officers.
Well, it looks like they just own everything and everyone's okay with that at this point.
Because the way they had some of the shots, like when Jones was there when he falls out of the tower or whatever... They're almost like questioning people and like interrogating like police officers would do, cordoning off things. So it made it sound like the Foot Clan has more of like a police presence. So maybe when they took over and Splinter kind of changes them into Guardians, when Karai does
he lost that maybe, and this is where, because they weren't there to basically challenge him, Shredder took over.
Yeah.
Or used Baxter, the corporation, to basically start buying the city and owning everything. When you're the only, if you're in a destroyed world, if you're the only source of stability, everyone's going to go to you no matter what you're doing, because you're the only source of stability.
Yeah.
So it's entirely possible they destroyed the world and set it up so that they would be the helping hand people saw.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny too, because like going back to the idea of the city being like isolated from everything else, everything outside of the ooze, is that Oroku Karai makes that reference to eradicating all the mutants.
Yeah.
So like, I almost wonder if he did kind of like a weird purge, I guess, because you really don't see any other mutants.
Well,
only the last Ronin.
Yeah.
You know, because normally you'd think,
Rocksteady, Bebop,
Rocksteady, Toka, Razor, whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What was the bunny, the samurai bunny?
Yusagi Yojimbo.
Yeah, there we go. Guys like that showed up in, the old stuff, it could be, they went through and they destroyed anything that wasn't human.
Yeah, because he said something about, I thought I destroyed all of you guys, but I guess not.
See, to me, I always took that just sounded like they went on a purge of clearing the sewers out of the turtles.
And so that's, just about to say, that was the way that I interpreted it, is I thought I killed all of you, as in, I killed
Splinter
all of the four turtles.
Because he said something about killing all of the mutants, but maybe I misread it. I don't know, I read it.
Well, it could be, because, there's also a group of mutants that the turtles are, that the Turtles have kind of allied themselves with. If you've ever heard of the Mutanimals.
Yeah.
They show up in the newest iteration of the IDW TMNT series. And so maybe it was about hunting all of the Mutanimals and the Turtles
dinosaur
and stuff.
Aliens and Dimension X people. And
well.
Those were all cartoon stuff.
Well, no, the Triceratons have. Were they in the... Oh, yeah. They were definitely in the comics.
I don't remember. Yep. I don't remember very much of like the
Triceratons.
Older comics,
the Triceratons came from the comic books. And the Utroms, actually, too. Krang and his people.
That's
were
Dimension
actually,
X,
yes.
I think, yeah.
I hate Krang. I thought Krang was stupid.
Krang's funny.
Well, see, yeah, Krang was dumb, especially when there was one of the series where the Shredder wasn't human. He was one of the Krang creatures in a body.
In what?
One of the Ninja Turtle cartoons, Shredder wasn't human. Shredder was an Utom. Or Utrom, or whatever.
Utrom.
I think that was
That's right. But he wasn't. But he wasn't portrayed as Shredder, though, was he?
Yeah, he was Utrom Shredder or something like that.
Interesting.
Yeah, that is.
Yeah that one.
Wait a minute. That's the 2003 one. He was actually.
So when it's,
oh, that's badass.
When it started, I think it was Shredder. And then later on, they reveal that it's.
There's a panel inside him that's.
It's that guy.
No, because that looks like the one from the Rise of the TMNT, though. No.
Oh,
no, it is. It's the same one.
Yeah.
God bless it.
That's ridiculous.
I honestly...
I love that design.
Series. Yeah. That series, they have never released it on, like, a collection of, like, DVDs and stuff like that, but I want it in the worst way. Ugh. That honestly was a really good... I think they did a really good job on that show.
Yeah. The design for the first Shredder in the foot in the 2000 series was good.
Hell yeah, Shredder looks like a badass. That's why I always loved Shredder's designs. I just hate the way he was always portrayed in like the cartoons and like the live action movies. Mm-hmm. Well, to a point. I liked Shredder in the live action movies. Super Shredder, on the other hand, was the worst.
So So 1 and 2 Shredder, honestly his portrayal was fantastic.
Yeah,
it was
he
spot
was
on.
Fucking
couldn't
scary.
Have asked, yeah, couldn't have asked for anything.
Yeah.
Oh, babies, babies. Oh.
It always made me laugh. But yeah, this.
But yeah, Super Shredder was a little bit. It was very underwhelming.
Yeah.
I loved the transformation. But it was so, like, come on, it was so stupid
such
at the end.
Fight.
It was such a cop-out.
It really was.
God,
it would have been cool to see, like, a lot... Well, they did, and it wasn't great.
What?
Well, I don't know if it wasn't the live-action Turtles now.
No, it was terrible.
Was it?
It was, yeah, the portrayal of Shredder wasn't that good.
I'll have to watch the newer ones.
It would behoove you to actually just, like, see them. I mean... Yeah. I think the first and...
They're all on Tubi. You can watch them for free.
I think, the first and the second one, they're, like... I would say...
There's some good aspects, but they're just cheesy.
They're entertaining, but if you are a fan of TMNT, just be prepared for it not to be what you liked about TMNT.
Like Megan Fox
being April O'Neil. Yes.
That was just a terrible choice to begin with.
Yeah, it really was.
God... It'll be as big of a disappointment as the Transformers movies.
See, the first one wasn't bad.
The first one was pretty good. Second one, I still have not seen that one all the way through. I have literally attempted 3 times to watch that movie, and I've fallen asleep halfway through it every time.
I've seen all of them but Bumblebee.
That's like me with the Pirates of the Caribbean movies.
I've seen all of them except for Bumblebee.
The Pirates of the Caribbean movies are the same thing. I've seen the first one, have never seen any of the other ones because they are just that bad.
Of the Transformer ones, I did like the third one that they used Leonard Nimoy as one of the voices, because Leonard Nimoy was originally... Galvatron and Megatron in the movie.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool.
Yeah.
All right, so is there anything else you would like to talk about? The big scene near the end where he almost kills himself was pretty fucking cool.
It was.
That was very neat.
Well, he doesn't kill himself.
He was going to. He was going to commit himself.
Oh, that's right.
After he fell out of the tower.
Falls out of the tower after a failed attempt to assassinate Oroku Karai.
Mm-hmm.
He retreats to the sewers. I forget about that,
where he was going to commit. Yeah.
Yeah. He talks about losing his father and his brothers, lays the weapons out. He even pulls out the colored masks, lays them across it. When did his katana break, by the way? Because he had the full katana at one point, but it must have broken, because he was going to do it with a broken katana.
Well, I don't remember, but I mean, he did have two swords, so maybe one of them was broken the whole time?
Maybe, because...
Because I think one was always shorter than the other one, so it's like maybe it was broken through some battle before the events of The Last Ronin.
I would have to reread it to see, because he did hit a lot of people with the katana.
Yeah,
but I just must have missed the panel where it broke,
because
then when he's going to commit he had a broken katana.
He was
going to
use the broken one,
which I thought that was a really cool scene. I was like, oh shit, like, that's something you would not expect, and this isn't the TMNT we grew up with.
This is not your parents' TMNT.
No,
yeah.
This is definitely, like, this is some dark shit, so that was such a really poetic, really cool scene that I thought was just, it was played out beautifully.
Okay, it's not Karai. Hiroto.
Oh, okay.
Oh, Karai, it must be, yeah.
Karai is the mother, and then, yes.
Hiroto is Hiroto.
Okay, so... But he's a Oroku.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oroku what?
That's
Hiroto.
That's what it was. My bad.
That's what I thought, because I'm like...
Like, the name, it's been bugging me, but I just couldn't quite put my finger on it, so
I feel like I saw the word Karai somewhere.
Because Karai is his mother.
I think he was talking to the tube, I think that's about it.
He may have made the mention of it.
I thought, I about to say, I feel like I saw a mention of it somewhere, but don't remember where, maybe.
Yeah.
All right, okay, so Oroku, Hiroto, Naruto.
Naruto.
Naruto to Naruto. Yeah.
Avatar.
That's Aang. Aang!
So, but no, I think, honestly, the first issue did a great job really painting a bleak picture with great visuals, great storytelling. I think it hit everything that I could have hoped for, and it makes me just want to, like, dive right into
issue. My hope is they can keep the energy up for the entire run.
Yeah,
me too.
Because there's nothing worse than, like, an amazing first issue,
and then it just peters out.
And then you're like, you get the second issue, and you're like, what happened between issue one and two?
Yeah.
Because that scene near the ending where it's like he wakes up and he sees his brothers and all that shit, like, kind of like a weird flashback thing.
Yeah.
That was cool. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad they only did it for, like, a few panels.
Mm-hmm.
It was really neat to see, he's in that twilight state of seeing them all still alive, and you assume he sees Splinter, but, like, they never actually show him. He says, oh my gosh, and then it's April, you know. He wakes up, but it's, like, it was beautifully done. Like, it definitely hooked the shit out of me.
Yeah.
Like, I love it.
Yeah, it was really good. It hit that nostalgia factor, but it also hit, like, I don't know, sentimental factor as well, too. So, I mean, they fired on all cylinders on this one.
Yeah, absolutely.
So
I suppose, should we get to, like, the spoilery type shit right here?
Yes, if you guys have nothing else to add so far.
I figure this is a good place to jump into it.
All right, so... from here on out,
have been mild spoilers already.
Yes.
But here, no.
A little bit.
Yeah, because we've been talking about the mom in the tube is a spoiler.
You've already said
April's name. We talked about Jones, which we don't know if it's a direct reference or not. It could just be an Easter egg.
I meant more so spoilers at who the turtle is.
Yeah, so
now we'll
go to, like, the major plot spoiler.
Yes, so we're gonna do a wrap-up right now, so... to avoid spoilers for those who still want to read the comic, if you don't want to spoil it for yourself,
this is where our episode.
This is where the episode's going to end. But if you would like to hear the rest of it, because I have things to talk about the final panel. Listen past the theme music, and we will continue our talk. So that'll do it for this PTG Powercast for those of you who don't want to hear this shit. So hit us up on Facebook.
Hit us up on Twitter.
Go to powertripgaming.tv. It takes you directly to the channel where you can watch all of our NES and non-NES gameplay videos where we're plowing through the 678 North American licensed NES games.
Yes, and you can watch our side quest material where we tackle games that aren't the NES, like the Super NES, the Sega Genesis, the Sega Saturn, the PlayStation, PlayStation 2, and all of those other great systems.
That's right, and if you don't feel like contacting us on social media, you can always shoot us an email at nespowertrip@gmail.com. iTunes or Stitcher. And search the PTG Powercast if you're watching this on the YouBoob.
Yes, it's called the PTG Powercast.
What did I say?
Huh?
What did I
say? I don't know. Enough of this nonsense. Started, on to the spoilers.
You started the episode. You, the PTG Powercast.
All right. Now, so.
Spoiler territory.
This is spoiler territory. Spoiler. For those of you who stuck around, we're going to talk about the last panel and our theories and everything.
The bombshell.
Ah! Which I saw coming.
I was going to say. So the bombshell to me was not really a bombshell.
No.
It was. No.
In fact,
because.
Let the record show. When we discussed this in our general life.
Basically.
I pretty much guessed who it was right off the bat. Because it's the only story arc that makes sense.
It was the only one that would make sense.
Yes.
So, all the way along, like, along the way, okay, I knew that the story...
I was able to eliminate certain characters almost immediately. Yes.
The story is called The Last Ronin. Obviously, I knew that the other turtles were gone. After, like, the first page or two, because you saw the talk bubble of, like, the other turtles, but it was off-panel, and I'm like, oh, maybe they're alive, and okay. And then I noticed that they kept showing the talk bubble, but it was always off-panel, and I'm like, I get it. He's hearing the voices, like, in his mind, or auditorily, he's hearing it somewhere, but they're not alive.
Well, there was a couple of panels early on where it showed the other turtles, the ghost turtles in the background.
Oh, okay.
The Force Ghost version.
The Force Ghost version.
Yeah, but they're Force Ghosts. Yeah, whatever. But
otherwise, it was only like a couple of panels, and then they never did it again.
But like Kevin said, they had enough of the dialogue to where the personalities of the turtles were coming through. So you could eliminate who it was. So one of the turtles was talking about like there's so much gear and technology here, and you can bypass this or whatever.
It's like, and then
the last Ronin was like, yeah, we don't have time for that. And it's like... okay, so obviously Donatello is one of the ones who's already gone. He's X him out.
The other one spoke in a way that you could just tell it was Raphael.
Just go through, bust the door down, just go right through.
And just the way the sentences were structured, it was kind of more brutesque. So you could definitely tell that's, you know, his more abrasive personality. That's definitely Raphael.
Yeah, so the whole time I thought, okay, it could either be Michelangelo, or at times, the way that he had that hostility, I was like, it could be Raphael. But I honestly think that, like... Raphael has had his time in the sun. Like, I really think they're going to give Michelangelo his time in the sun. So when they revealed at the end who the last Ronin was, potentially I'm like, oh, this really isn't a surprise to me. Like, it had to be.
Yeah, April says something about, who are you talking to, Michelangelo? So, and it's him in the bed. It's just, it was just, and as I had said, he's the only story arc that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Because Leonardo is too obvious. He's the leader.
Raph is the too obvious one.
Well, both of them, really,
because Raph is the typical, okay, there's a character going off and doing something around their own. 9 times out of 10, it was him.
Yeah. It was him. He always had to get away.
And the way Paul was mentioning his hot-headedness. Mm-hmm.
Usually why he went away.
Yeah. Look,
like, what was where he used to wear the armor and go on the motorcycle on his own as the vigilante?
Yeah, I remember what you're talking about.
He wore that full, like, metal suit at one point as a vigilante.
I know, but I'm just trying to
I can't remember the name he used. But Raph went off on his own as a vigilante. Mm-hmm. I mean, Leo used to go off on his own every now and then when him and Raph butted heads.
Yeah.
So it's like, those were the two, like, we've done that type of story already. Don't do that story. Mm-hmm.
Leonardo was the only one that I had a hard time pinning down when he was talking, because him and Donatello could have kind of both been interchangeable in the way that when they talk strategy, like when he's trying to figure out how to get into the tower, when Raph decides, or when Michelangelo devises the plan to use the momentum of the explosion to propel him up.
Sure.
That seemed like a Leonardo move.
Mm-hmm.
But could have also been a Donatello move, because Donatello was a strategist. So it's like, it's one of those where he was hard to see. So I was like, it could be Leonardo, I suppose. But again, like you said, that kind of feels too easy, in my opinion.
But to be quite honest, I mean, the way that it was, like, I was not surprised at the end when they revealed it. I was surprised that they revealed it. Like, I thought that they were going to, like, not reveal it, that they were going to leave it until, like, maybe issue 2 or 3 to finally reveal who it was. But, that was kind of surprising to me.
I also think they did enough to show that he has traits of each of his brothers now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's the... So I can see why there is certain debate as to whether or not it actually is Mikey.
See, and that's
so, and I can see, like, maybe it could potentially be that it's not Mikey, and that when the other brothers died, he basically became each of them, in turn, so they are no longer just individual personalities. They're all one personality in this turtle now.
Yeah.
So, because... The brute force, like, oh, I'm just going to go through the front door.
Mm-hmm.
That's a Raph move.
That's a Raphael move.
Yeah.
Maybe we could sneak up and go this way. That's the Leo type. Stay out of sight. We're ninja.
Mm-hmm.
Donnie was the, well, yeah, we could hack this. And it's like...
Use the EMPs to blow up the mousers.
Yeah.
You
can see where, like, all the other turtles are now, where the remaining turtle has changed. They're no longer who they were.
Mm-hmm.
So they've grown in that sense, or due to the loss, they had no choice but to change everything that was about them.
Because
nowhere in there does Mike's personality of, you know, the happy-go-lucky ever show up.
Mm-hmm.
No. Which is why his is the only one that makes sense from a growth standpoint.
Yeah.
He's always portrayed as the carefree, the happy-go-lucky guy. He's the youngest
brother. Yeah, he's the little brother.
But to have a storyline where he's forced to abandon his childlike ways and grow up.
But at the same time, he is the one who has taken the death of Splinter the hardest. And so I could see him, and that's why the whole time I had it in the back of my mind where I'm like, I think this is Michelangelo. Because he has had this steady decline where it's like, you can tell that he's not the joking Michelangelo that he used to be. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's still periods where he tries to be like a funny guy and tell jokes, but you can tell there's a lot more seriousness.
It's that uncomfortable levity.
Yes, it's more like he feels like he doesn't have the leadership anymore, and he doesn't have his father, so it's like he's lost that innocence.
Which is weird, because you would think Leo would have been the one that took it the hardest, but I think Leo was the one that was the most prepared for it.
He was, yeah. It was Mikey who took it.
Talking about
hardest.
Michelangelo's decline there, it almost would have been cool to see a storyline where Michelangelo took over the Foot Clan. Like, he becomes so, like, disenfranchised by the death of Splinter that he kind of turns. Mm-hmm. And it would be a storyline where the three turtles are taking down Michelangelo and the Foot Clan.
Well,
that would have been kind of cool, actually.
No, because that actually happened, well, somewhat like that. But in the Image series that Image published of the TMNT, they only made it through 23 issues before they canceled it because of the sales and just the fact that nobody liked it. it's actually not even canon, because they said that it was so terrible that it's not canon. In that storyline, I think it's Raph?
Oh, that would only make sense.
Or Leonardo, who actually becomes Shredder.
Really?
He literally becomes Shredder. He wears the suit and everything.
I feel like I vaguely remember that.
They used that storyline in the 2003 animated series, too.
Maybe that's what it was. I feel like I remember hearing about a turtle becoming Shredder, and I just couldn't place it. And Raphael would make sense. Like, he butted heads with Leonardo too much.
And
to
then
the point
I think
it
was Raphael, because then they revisited that in the IDW series where Leonardo, for a while, was brainwashed by Shredder to be his... That's the IDW. That was when Leonardo was actually brainwashed by Shredder to be his Jonin.
Is that the
term Jonin? Is when you're like a apprentice to somebody?
I don't remember.
Well, like, whatever it is. But yeah, that was in the IDW series. But in the 2003 series, Raphael was actually Shredder.
Oh, interesting.
Or either that or else he had like a fear of becoming Shredder and it was like a dream sequence. But he was like... He became the head of the Foot Clan, so they visited that.
Oh, that one.
Yes, there that it was. Yeah, That was cool. In the IDW series, or in the Image series.
Interesting, interesting.
I had that issue, too. Which one? 13? Yeah, I think I had that one.
Huh.
Yeah.
That's kind of a cool idea, though.
Yeah,
but, yeah,
for sure.
Mm-hmm. I when they showed Michelangelo, like, I'm curious to see if it's actually going to be him. Because you figure April O'Neil's been around them long enough that she would know the distinct personalities of each one. But at the same point...
Trauma changes a person.
Trauma can change someone. Maybe she doesn't know him as much as she thinks she does.
Yeah.
So, like you said, when you had told me don't put too much stock into what they showed, I'm like, I could see that. I could see them toying around with the idea of it could be multiple personalities.
Yeah, and that's what I'm thinking, too, is that with the fact that they...
some of the concept art from...
Oh, that's really cool. With the fact that they revealed who the last Ronin was, like, in issue one, I have a feeling that they could easily go back on that, where basically, I mean, they could even just open up the next episode, or the next issue by saying, like, what are you talking about? I'm not Michelangelo, I'm Leonardo, or whatever. Yeah. Or else she'll say, like, what are you talking about, Michelangelo? And then it's like, he'll say something, and, like, halfway through the next issue, it's like, well, who am I talking to now? You're talking to Donatello. It's like, he could literally easily change, like, because of that multiple personality, could easily change who that character is.
Yeah, that's kind of an interesting concept.
So it doesn't, so, I mean, I feel like...
She actually looks pretty badass.
Oh, that's Jessica.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's why I feel like, they revealed it, but I don't think that it was kind of like the... aha moment, because I still feel like it's early enough to where they could easily renege and they could easily change it to be whatever they want it to be so that it's a further reveal down the line.
That's possible. I can see that. But it was definitely an enjoyable ride. I'll tell you that for that first issue. That was some really interesting stuff. Like I said, I love the idea when he pulled out all four of the masks and laid them out ceremoniously. You know, it was such a cool sequence, even when he didn't go through with it, you know. But I'm curious to see, like, the Jones girl, see what role she has to play, because he steals the bike from her and all that kind of stuff. And I hope we see more of, like, the upgraded versions of, like, the Stockman stuff.
Yeah.
And just some of the more elite foot soldiers and shit. Hell, I would love to see, like an advanced Rocksteady and Bebop. You know, maybe this guy's keeping some mutants around. Like, maybe there was, like, a mutant genocide kind of thing where he went around and just fucking cut everybody down. So it's going to be kind of interesting. It's definitely interesting.
Or it goes the other way where he gets beaten back so bad that he has to resort to
taking the ooze
and going Super Shredder himself.
Yeah, maybe.
Well, it's...
I mean, it'd be predictable, but it would be...
I also want to see, like, Casey Jones in there, too. And it's funny because I don't think you know this because it's you haven't read, like, the current stuff. But so there is, like, a gang, like, a rival gang called the Purple Dragons in TMNT. And they're basically, like, a bunch of, like, criminals and lowlifes and stuff. And Casey Jones' father, do you remember Hun from the cartoon series, the big hulking guy?
Yeah.
They basically retcon that so that Hun is actually Casey Jones's father.
Okay.
And,
that one.
Yep. Yeah. He was the head of the Purple Dragons in the 2003 series.
Yeah.
And later on they reveal that he was actually Casey Jones's dad. And so I would honestly, I feel like they could play it up like something happened with Casey Jones where he didn't end up with April. And so in his despondency, he ended up kind of taking over his father's legacy. And now he's in charge of the Purple Dragons. So it's like, I feel like there's so many different stories and so many different directions they can go with this.
That actually could be possible because wasn't that Jones girl in a purple...
Yes.
Outfit? Her outfit was purple. So maybe that could play very well into
it. And I think that's why I thought about that is because I'm like, oh my God, is she like part of the Purple Dragons?
Yeah.
And so it's like maybe Casey ended up kind of taking over his father's legacy and led the Purple Dragons.
Yeah.
So I mean, there's so many different directions and so many different things they can do. And so I'm like, I can't remember the last time I've been this excited over like a storyline.
Yeah. Like Kevin said, too, I hope they elaborate a little more on how the city became what it is. And, like, the outside looking like it's basically ooze pool. And just this, like, maybe they mass-produced the ooze and it got fucking weird. And
Who
just
knows,
the fact
man.
That it looks like the apocalypse happened, it's like, yeah. What could have happened in, like, a 40 or 50 year, or even, like, between a 30 and 50 year gap, what possibly could have happened where the world looks like this? Like, yeah. Come on.
Especially,
you have
like,
to explain that.
Well, it could also literally just be that section of, like, New York looks like that.
Maybe.
To where
maybe
they're so, they're cut off from everything because it got so bad in that area.
Yeah, maybe.
That's right, because it takes it place in, like,
New York.
Brooklyn,
it would have been,
right?
Yeah, it would have been New York, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Isn't it Brooklyn, though, specifically? I always thought it was... Why do I have Brooklyn come to me?
I'm thinking the second
live-action movie.
Because I think they... did they make mention of the Bronx? I think they made mention of the Bronx.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe.
So maybe around that area.
Okay. But yeah, I'm hooked. Mm-hmm. I can't wait to read the rest of this. I'm super pumped, too.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, I haven't been this excited in a long time for a comic. We'll have to do these more often.
Yeah.
As the issues come out, I think we'll have more discussions.
I would love to. Yeah.
So, boom. So, there you guys go.
Hopefully, it wasn't considered spoilers that, I guess, because we brought up the whole Karai thing being the one who was, like,
I don't think
at the
spoilers.
End. I don't know if it's spoilers, because if they actually did make mention of Karai in the story, then, I mean, any TMNT fan will know exactly who Karai is.
Yeah.
At that point.
And I have a feeling you'd know what she looks like.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's why, like, I kept getting that impression when they showed her in the tube. I'm like, why am I supposed to know who this is?
Yeah.
Like, I feel like kind of it's a reference to something that a true TMNT
well,
fan
not
would
just that,
know
they
of.
Wouldn't, they never would have even had to have shown her. The moment that they said, you know, he's Shredder's grandson.
Then I would have known that Karai had a kid. Yeah.
Yeah. So if you're a fan, you already know
yeah.
some of this stuff. So,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's just a matter of plucking it out and remembering.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah. No, I think the only real spoiler is the fact that they
the
showed
it
was Michelangelo.
The end panel, the last page, yep. Mm-hmm.
So, all right. Hopefully all right. You guys, if you stuck around for the spoiler, if you didn't give a shit, hopefully...
hopefully you guys can get your hands on a copy if you're into TMNT. Get your hands on a copy of The Last Ronin.
It's very good so far.
It is going back to the presses, so they're doing a second print. Because obviously the first print is out of stock at most places, but you may be able to find it. So read it. Let us know what you think.
It said something about a lot of variant covers too.
The back,
there's a lot of
like back
covers.
Like three pages
were
all variants.
Yeah,
they all look really fucking neat.
Yeah, it's usually what ends up happening is that stores can commission like an artist to do a special cover,
interesting,
or like special art, and then they'll just basically
or they do a contest. Or,
yeah.
Or well, and if you noticed, a lot of the art in those variants. Notice what color the bandana is for a whole bunch of them?
Red. Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
So yeah, a whole bunch of people were like, oh, it's Raph.
No.
Right from the title,
no,
like, Last Ronin, it's
I
Raph.
Think they're going, no, I think they're going back to the classic, like, the red mask. Yeah. Because that's old school, where everybody had red.
Now, if it was a black picture with, like, the red cut, yeah, but, like, a lot of them, it's clearly looks like they were drawing Raph and then... Because that's the biggest speculation of who it was.
Again, I think it was, actually.
Yeah,
I think that was
be.
The big speculation, is people thought it was Raph.
Well, I remember the first cover I saw was him, I don't remember if he was kneeling or whatever with the weapons, and then it was the three ghosts behind him with their hands on on his shoulder.
Mm.
I don't remember if that was an actual official artwork, though. I'd have to see.
So, but yeah.
That one. I don't know if that was an official one or not.
I think it was, actually.
That one's really fucking cool. Actually.
It's one of the variants.
Yeah. But yeah, read it. Let us know what you think. Hopefully that if you are into TMNT or you kind of stepped away from TMNT, hopefully this pulls you back in. Honestly, there's a lot of great stuff going through TMNT right now. And I think that IDW just keeps hitting the stride when it comes to the writing, to the art. Everything has just been spot on.
Yeah.
Lately, it's been fantastic. So.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah,
so
let
we'll
us know what you think.
Yeah, next issue that comes out, we'll do another one of these.
We will be back, hopefully in 30 days.
That's right. Now you're listening.
If there's no delays.
If there's no delays. Yeah, which that seems to be the current climate these days.
There's
delays
yeah.
on everything,
yeah,
which,
for sure.
I mean, I can understand. Mm-hmm. You know? Oh, God. The Cyberpunk delay was hilarious. Did you hear about that? That
no.
Cyberpunk, what is it, 2077 or whatever?
Yeah.
It's
been delayed
again.
Again,
yes.
For like the fourth or fifth time.
Big stink about it. Big stink.
Well,
because people are finally getting the way, stuff.
We'll talk about this one off the thing, because it's not relevant to this.
So, there you go. You know, that was the PTG PowerCast.
You've been listening with power.
Turtle power!
Turtle power!
Cowabunga.
Cowabunga. Cowabunga says it all.
Cowabunga!
Oh, shell fuck!
Shell shock.
That's what it was.